This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The Raspberry Pi micro PC has been on the market for several years now, and it's in its fourth generation. A handful of companies have developed CMS software applications for the Pi, some I'd say more successfully than others. One that's now been around for 5+ years and has built up both a mature platform and big user base is Pi Signage, an Indian company based in the tech mecca of Bangalore. I spoke with founder Ravi Bale about why his software consulting firm got into the signage marketplace and why it went with Raspberry Pi. We get into a lot of things, including how Pi Signage makes money with a managed CMS that costs subscribers less than $3 a month. All right, Ravi, thank you for joining me. Can you give me the background on Pi Signage?
Yes, my name is Ravi Bale, and we founded this in 2014. It specifically came from a customer request from India. And in 2015, we made it online. And what we do is we offer two free licenses in the beginning. So today we have around more than 20,000 customers, and they are across the world. So most of our solution comes from Raspberry Pi.
Okay, so you're a software company based in India, and you had a customer who came to you and said, we want to do something with digital signage. Can you help us?
Yes, and they had an issue with the industrial PCs because industrial PCs needed a fan, and because of the dust and other things, they had repeated failures. So, and that time what happened is Raspberry Pi was widely accepted, and we thought, you know, if we develop software on Raspberry Pi, probably we can address the whole world for signage.
Okay. And all of your operations are in India?
Yes, we are totally based out of Bangalore, India, and we are a small team. I think we never exceeded more than 10 anytime.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've not been to India. Is your part of the country an area where there's a lot of IT industry?
Yes, this city, which is called Bangalore, I think is where most of the... lot of IT happens here.
Okay, so Bengaluru is Bangalore.
Yes, yes, yes.
Ah, all right. So yeah, you've got two universities there that are kind of equivalent to MIT, right?
Yeah. Plus, the weather is very nice here. So I think that's how we grew up.
And is it challenging to retain talent because... a lot of, you know, talented developers can, you know, get jobs overseas, whether it's in the United States, Canada, or Europe?
Yeah, that is true. But because we are so focused company and we are small size, we typically don't have that issue.
Okay. So the value proposition of your platform is it's a digital signage CMS. It works with low-cost hardware player, and from what I can tell running through your website, the software application is very low cost compared to what I would say would be industry standards around the world.
I won't say that, but what we have done is we have kind of, you know, player takes care of itself. Like, for example, a player runs offline, and we need not handhold all the operations. So the software cost as such, obviously it is not as high as other countries, but the way we have used open source and the Linux utilities, I think that's where we are able to, you know, break even at a very low cost. By the way, many of our customers don't feel that it is low cost. They feel it is costly.
Okay, so...
And they are from US.
Right. So let's talk about that, because if I'm looking at your pricing, it would work out to, well, first of all, you have a couple of free licenses, but even if you subscribe on a managed services basis, it's $35 US a year, which is less than $3 a month using my advanced math skills.
That's correct. Actually, the first year it is $35. From second year onwards, it is $20. So basically we say that the managed price is $2 per month and 2 months are free because you are paying for a year.
Right. And people still say that's too costly?
Yes. We have...
Good Lord.
Yeah, we have people, you know, I advise a lot of people not to go for open source, because with open source, they pay only $25 one time and rest is free. But we have a lot of people trying to, you know, install the open source.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to use your open source stuff, you pretty much need to have some developer and IT chops, right? You need to understand how to do that stuff.
May not be that much, because it is more, you know, we have put the instructions in GitHub and it is installing a couple of packages and pulling from the GitHub. So most of it, like, you know, probably 90% of the people who use open source, they never developed any code.
But they have some technical abilities, right? Like
Yes.
I have some technical abilities, but I wouldn't go near anything that I would download from GitHub, because I'd just lose whatever hair I have remaining.
Yeah. Then we have managed services or white label services for such people.
Right. So with your application, with your platform, is it pretty similar to what you would see out in the commercial market in terms of what you see is what you get, user experience, all the features that you'd find in a typical digital signage CMS?
Yes, that's right. Like one of the key advantages is we started late, that is in 2014-15. So we are totally based on all cloud technologies. We use the latest Node.js, which is the, you know, so everything is pretty much like very simple.
Yeah, because you do Node.js, that means you can do things like directly connect to the player for like through WebSockets, that sort of thing?
Yes. And we have, you know, some of the key features which people like is we can see screenshot. And because of Raspberry Pi hardware, we can see the screenshot, what is shown on the TV.
Okay. So what's the use case for your platform? Is it meant for small businesses? Is it steered towards education or a particular market?
Our major customers are system integrators and in-house IT managers. Having said that, we have a lot of many customers, like, you know, in the initial years, at least majority of our customers are from churches and schools. Mm-hmm. Even today, they have a big segment with us. And, you know, there are people who offer thousands of layers for others. They use white label of service of ours.
Oh, okay. So you can build a white label version of Pi Signage and as a systems integrator offer a digital signage CMS and services that their customers won't track back to Pi Signage. They'll see it as the platform of their integrator.
Yes, that's true.
And the attraction of that for the integrator is what?
Traction for them is, you know, they can do a lot of value addition, because we have the software cost is only $25 and, you know, some small managing services. Mm-hmm. But they add hardware, they add content, and they offer it as a service. And probably they support it very well because they are in that local market. Mm-hmm. So the I think the majority of money they keep, and we get, we are more like a, you know, I always keep saying we are like Intel, where we offer one component.
Mm-hmm. So you're the PyCyanogen side.
Yeah.
Okay. For all of these systems integrators who you're referencing, are they defined by geography? Like, do you have a master partner in Thailand, a master partner in Malaysia and US and so on, or is it pretty open to whoever wants to use it?
It's pretty much open to whoever wants to use it. And we never went in tying up with master reseller. It is more on online. Whoever writes to us in, support at PyCyanogen.com, they get the equal treatment. So that's how it goes.
And why, you have a pretty big installed base. Why are people coming to you? Is it driven by purely by price, or are there other reasons?
The number one reason I would say is it's plug and play, because they just put it and it just works. And most of the time it works in offline. Even where internet connectivity and other issues are there, it is a very reliable player. Plus, it is cost optimized.
So let's talk about that though. Yeah, I'm curious, when you say it's plug and play, you just get a unit and plug it in and off you go. What actually happens if I went online to PyCyanogen.com right now and subscribed? Am I getting a Raspberry Pi device from you, or am I going out and buying that and then consolidating myself and installing your software on it?
We don't supply any hardware. So you just sign at PyCyanogen.com, and then you get a email saying what all you need to do. As I said, system integrator or the end user, he just orders a Pi kit and then programs our image and puts it in Pi. After that, it is very self-explanatory things.
So you load the software image on there. Do you have to be technical to do that?
It is like you have to program a SD card. So there are programs out there. But I've seen hiccups for some people. Pretty much everyone does that.
But if you've got systems integrators and IT people as your primary buyers, they're going to know how to do that. Maybe the person who runs a couple of nail salons in Bangalore might have more of a problem if they're not technical.
The thing is, we have very less customers in India, just to say that.
Okay, so let's say Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah. So we try to offer a service through our Zendesk, and I'm available in Skype. So many people use that service as well. Otherwise, it's pretty much, they know, many times they know more than me.
All right. So you get the software images loaded on the device. You figure out what you're going to use for a display, and you would mount the media player back of the display or somewhere near there and plug it in, establish connectivity. And what do you key in, a subscription code, or how do you sort of sync up with your managed service?
This Raspberry Pi has a unique CPU ID or a Mac ID. So that is shown on the TV, and it says, please register this player. So they go to managed service or an open source server, and they just register that ID, and it gets, it comes online.
Okay.
Because of the WebSocket, as I was telling.
So it's not dissimilar to having, subscribing to a service that's on a set-top box or whatever. It's going to pop up on the screen and give you a code, and you type that into a browser and it validates it, and off you go.
Yes. And we provide a lot of support for the player. Like, player acts as a access point for Wi-Fi when it comes up, so that people don't have to look for cables or keyboards. Okay. And they can just, configure that.
So for the Raspberry Pi device itself, it's $35 or $45 depending on versions of it. What realistically is the real build cost for a micro PC that has a Raspberry Pi in it? And what are those things that you need to be careful about? I'm sure somebody could say, yeah, I put this whole thing together. It only cost me $60. Well, good for you, but it's not going to last. So what realistically is the cost, and what are the gotchas?
It costs more than that. And I've seen people assembling the hardware at $75 cost. But the main caution we do is for three things. One is the power supply, because of the, Pi sensitivity especially on the SD card. Mm-hmm. And second is the class 10 SD card from a reputed vendor, because that is a key thing that can go wrong. And the third is because we use a lot of TV control commands, HDMI cable.
Okay. And for the, let's talk first about the SD card. Why are some SD cards better than other ones?
The SD card is a key component, and we have seen in the last 4 years, if something goes wrong, that is SD card. Other than that, other things don't go. So because of that, we are probably extra cautious. Whatever best we can do, we do that. So frankly, we have not tested any other SD card. So we always say use class 10 reputed vendors SD card.
And that's because of the read-write cycles, and the things just basically exhaust the number of times they can do that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Because,
that's the same reason I think a lot of them are moving to Ubuntu Core or some such OS, which has read-only partitions, many things.
Oh, okay.
So that's the main thing, yeah.
Is that a direction you're going in?
Yes, we have plans for that.
Okay. And then you mentioned the HDMI cable. Is you want a good cable so that you can command the display?
Yes. We have various, we can schedule TV power on and off using a special playlist called TV Off. Mm-hmm. So that is used by many of our customers. So that works only if, technically CEC version 1.4 or higher cable support.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
You mentioned churches and schools and that sort of thing. Is your software particularly tuned to a vertical like education, or is it pretty broadly set up so that a retailer can use it, a law office can use it, or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, it is pretty much basic and caters to all segments. We are like, Intel or some component. So it is used by, one of the major segments what we have is showing this dashboards within enterprises. Mm-hmm. It could be from their ERPs or from their server management software. Mm. So from there to just showing, 4 images and 2 videos in a small restaurant,
right.
Anybody can use it. We don't align ourselves to a vertical.
Okay. So if you're showing dashboards from an ERP system or KPIs from something else, are you providing templates to do that, or is it more of just like an API that would allow you to pull in that material or just show a URL that has that information visualized from another system?
There are 2 parts to this question. The later part is, yes, we just take the URL. And there may be some authentication methods because it is not available. So we do some header support. Then we just show the URL. Mm-hmm. Now, templates, yes, we do support many templates. And a customer can define his own templates. Like we support up to 4 video zones and up to 6 zones. Mm-hmm. So they can show different things in the screen.
Okay. When it comes to these sorts of platforms, one of the criticisms that gets laid out there is, yes, this is all very fine and good for a small business. It will do what you need, but this sort of a low-cost platform won't scale. The platform would not be able to handle hundreds of locations and players, or if you were wanted to schedule hundreds of locations and players, it would take forever because it's not designed for large networks. How do you respond to that sort of criticism?
It is not true because every location needs one device, and it is pretty much acts like distributed computing or distributed. Like it has to take care of only that location.
Right.
Now, the rest of it is all this scale of distribution and groups. Everything is handled by server, and we use, nowadays a lot of cloud service providers are there. Mm-hmm. So you can just provision a new bandwidth or disk anytime.
I'm curious if when you started back in 2014, 2015, did you look at what else is out there and try to, maybe borrow on some of the best of what you've seen? Or did you just build the thing?
In this company, I'm the only support guy. So, in the beginning, as I said, we had a customer in mind and we just built it for him. Mm-hmm. After that, because of this two players, we have a lot of testers and salespeople coming in. And by listening to them, we just built. So I would say it is pretty much my support activity, mm-hmm. and whatever our customer has told. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our strengths.
So do you even pay much attention to the competition that's out there and the way they design their user experience and so on?
We pay attention to competitors, maybe not for UI as such, but many times, some of the features we may think that it is not possible, but we have seen our colleagues doing it very well. Mm-hmm. So that time we do a lot of pay attention to them.
One of the things that's come up roughly in the same time frame as your company is this whole idea of smart displays using system on chip technology embedded in a commercial flat panel display, and therefore removing the need for a separate media player. Many of the big display guys have gone down that path. The only one that hasn't has been NEC. And interestingly enough, they decided we're going to stick with a commercial flat panel display that doesn't have that, but has a trap door in the back that would allow you to snap in a module like a Raspberry Pi board. Have you looked at that, and how do you argue for and against things like smart displays?
The key thing, nowadays in anything is software. So the people who have come up with smart displays with the closed architectures, they are going to run out of steam one day because they have built many times the software themselves, or they have put a very generic operating system like Windows. Mm-hmm. So, you would see in many places the window welcome screen is showing up instead of the signage. Mm-hmm. NEC has done a good thing, and, probably we cannot talk much there, but we are very well aware of NEC modules because we work with them in some of the countries.
Okay. Do you see problems develop because it is a separate device and therefore there's a cable and cables wiggle loose, that sort of thing, they come loose and cause problems? Or is that a misnomer?
That is a misnomer, but what we are worried, and one of our biggest support issue is connectivity to network. Because the Ethernet is very good, but that is not available in all display places. The Wi-Fi, it is either signal is weak or it keeps on going up and down or something gets changed. So that is one key challenge, because that needs a lot of technical expertise.
Mm-hmm. The user application, is it just in English or is it in multiple languages?
What we offer is, as I said, we use all cloud technologies. So mm-hmm. we have some template files. So many of our customers voluntarily or for their own use, they convert it to many European languages.
Oh, okay. So I could be in Denmark Czech Republic or whatever, and choose a language pack and make the user experience in Danish or Czech or whatever?
Yes. Actually, many of the white label guys, they give their own files, which we just upload and, their own language we'll see. Because for us, of course, US is a big market, but Europe is also equally a big market. So
you're you've got a pretty good installed base. You have a lot of customers, but the actual revenues that you bring in per customer wouldn't be all that high just because of the price point that you guys go out at. How do you need a very large, much bigger than you have right now, installed base to really grow as a company? Or are you looking at outside investment, or are you pretty happy the way you are?
We are pretty happy with the way we are. And it is like an internet economy, which I say, first 85% of the users are free. Mm-hmm. We don't get any money from them. But they help us spread the word, make the platform very usable and rugged. Mm-hmm. With that, we make next 10% of the customers pay us a lot because of this. And to satisfy this next 10% of the customers, next 5% again we give free in terms of discounts and other things. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to say is the money comes still from very key customers, probably 10% of this whole user base. And we don't make any money from the other 90%.
Oh, wow. And that's because you're doing customization and adding functionality, that sort of thing?
No, because this, we are making it more like a component. So the customer, let us say a good customer, if he is happy, he will buy more than, he'll buy hundreds of players. And even in some cases, they will buy thousands of players.
Okay.
We have some resellers who have gone past, 2000 players.
Gotcha. So one of the things that's done with the quote unquote freemium model is this whole idea of giving them core functionality at no cost. But if you want enhanced functionality like reporting, things like analytics, device management, whatever it may be, you'll pay a little bit extra for that. Is that a business model that you guys do or are looking at?
We do very less as of that now. Like if someone wants more storage space, we charge them mm-hmm. because we pay to Amazon. And second is there is no user management and report module in the open source, mm-hmm. which is available only in our managed or white label service. Mm-hmm. Other than that, the player wise, it is same, whether it is free or paid.
Right. Raspberry Pi is now in its fourth generation. Is it now at a point where it can do everything that you'd want it to do as a digital signage media player, or are there technologies or enhancements or advancements that you're still waiting on for this thing to become the perfect media player for you?
One of the interesting things happened in Pi 4 is, you know, till Pi 3, it was more of proprietary when it comes to playing videos and some of this display technologies. In Pi 4, they have tried to get into the mainstream, that is using the standard Linux drivers and other things. Mm-hmm. So that is something which we are facing challenge. So I still feel, some of the things, like, for example, showing a text or a message on top of video, or showing image on top of video, those things still, there need to be either at least some software or firmware support. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, pretty much, what happens is 80% of the people, they just want to show few images and videos in their, displays, or it is a URL. That, I think, Pi suits very well.
Are there things that you would say to a prospective customer that, based on their description of what they want to do, you would say this isn't going to be the solution that you require?
Yes. Like one of the typical thing is many people want to do video wall solution using Pi. Technically, it is possible. We always say that either use an external hardware or go for some proper video walls software. Like that we have for many such use cases, we say we are sorry. Like, or our own colleagues are there in many cases. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe I have seen video walls done with Raspberry Pi, but I always wonder if it's one of these cases where they got it to work as opposed to they got it to work well.
Yes, they got it to work. And my business hat, it says, is like you invest thousands of dollars on displays and, the infrastructure and rentals. So why do you want to save, few $100 mm-hmm. in just a CPU?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where the conventional mainstream PC market is going in terms of signage. It's going to be a specialty device for specific applications, and everybody else for day-to-day applications are going to be using Raspberry Pis and system-on-chip displays or dedicated set-top box style devices.
Yes, and the one of the things we have in the roadmap and queries we get is these Android TVs and Apple TVs, mm-hmm. because they can do many more things than just showing Pi signage.
Right.
One of the typical cases, hospitals, almost every room has a Apple TV or Android TV. Mm-hmm. So they want to show general entertainment all the time. But if someone wants health information, they go into kiosk mode and go that. So we have limited support for kiosk and other things for those kind of applications. Mm-hmm. But we plan to come on, thing on Android and iOS.
So what's the big thing that people should look for out of Pi signage in the next 6 to 12 months?
One thing is we will expand to at least two other platforms. Maybe one of the thing is Intel NUC.
Okay.
That's a module. As you said, many big enterprises say that Raspberry Pi is not for us. We need to use industrialized PCs.
Okay.
So we will come to that. And we will continue to provide more value on our Pi 4. Pi 4 is offered by very few people mm-hmm. compared to Pi 3.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hmm. All right. Last question. Where, if people are interested in your platform, where do they find you?
It's like they find in pisignage.com and everything they find there. And the latest updates, it's more I talk to customers through pisignage Twitter handle.
Oh, okay.
So pretty much everything is. And the last thing we have is we have a full-fledged API. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them develop their own CMS using our player as the player.
Right. But they still subscribe to the players, right? The software?
Yes, yes, right. Yes.
Okay. All right. Robbie, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.